Hello and welcome to the 50 Shades of Trade podcast, the show that brings you unique insights into running a service business. Each week, I'll be talking to business owners from all kinds of backgrounds. They'll share with you what works, what doesn't, and how to overcome big challenges in business. If you run a service business, this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Matt Franklin, CEO and founder of Payaka. This week, I spoke to Jack McGavin, who's got a background as a semi-professional footballer and also worked in big management roles at British Gas. He's taken those learnings, combined them with his own insights into building a team and built a very successful business at the Glow Group. So hello, Jack McGavin, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for agreeing to join us. I think you've got a really, really interesting background that I think people can learn a lot from, including a stint at Lincoln City. You're now obviously the owner, founder of the Glow Group. It'd be great to kick off by just hearing a bit of a story of Jack, really, like how you started out and how you ended up here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, first and foremost, Matt. Appreciate it. Left school, had a relatively decent education, just a normal school. And then I had an apprenticeship with Lincoln City. So I was crazy for my football, wanted to be a professional footballer. From the age of 12 is probably where I saw that as a potential sort of avenue to potentially do. That didn't quite work out. So from leaving school at 16, I had 2 years at Lincoln City. The old classic, struggled with injury, didn't quite make it. but in all seriousness, I did badly struggle with injuries from probably 16 to 19. By that time, I'd already left Lincoln because I got released, got an apprenticeship with a social housing firm in Lincolnshire called Aaron Services. They're actually a really big company on the east coast of England, really, but I think they're called the SureServe Group now. And that's just predominantly social housing work. So I did installation. I had a lot of installation experience as an apprentice. And then you saw both sides of it because there was a service and maintenance team as well. So saw a lot of that side of the business as well. Did my time, learned a lot from a lot of different people there. And got to the point of thinking, well, I want to do this myself. So went by myself, sort of saw the good bits in where I worked there. Obviously gained a lot of experience, but I thought, you know, I can probably make a better life for myself, maybe working for myself. And at that time, when I made the step, obviously I was 20, must have been 24, 25 at that point, worked for myself before Glow. And sort of subcontracted to British Gas. Saw that as a security of work, because at that point, winning work and all marketing and that sort of stuff was something obviously I had no idea about, really. So I wanted some security of work, so I looked at getting on British Gas's contract on their books as a subcontractor, and did that for about a month or two. And I think they probably spotted something in me. I was quite keen. And got offered a full-time position with British Gas. And at the time, I was still playing semi-professional football and still had aspirations to play as high as I could. And I saw being in employment a way of me of managing my time better, because like anyone knows, if they work in this industry, you know, in the winter, you know, you're a slave to the job at times, really, with the nature of what we do. But I saw full-time employment of helping me still play football to a high level, because I was at Gainsborough Trinity at the time, which was Conference North. Stepped into British Gas, and then obviously a business like British Gas, it's got a lot of structure in place, a lot of a lot of hierarchy, etc. And I saw that as an opportunity to obviously forge a career at BG, and that didn't quite pan out, really, just because in the end I didn't end up believing in the model that they were trying to obviously transition towards, to trying to be a more commercially viable business, because it's essentially quite an old, heavy, clunky business from a service and repair and installation perspective. And after progressing up there to a service manager's role, I got my experience managing people for the first time around 27, 28 years of age. Did that for around 3 or 4 years. And there was a restructure like there is there. There's quite a lot of them that go on, and then they tend to be every 2 or 3 years now. Saw that as an opportunity to put my name in the ring to leave and get a little bit of redundancy money, to be completely honest. and saw that as an opportunity to set up the early foundations of Glow, of what I intended to do there, which is basically build a business which is in a similar standing to British Gas in regards to the perceived quality that you'd get, because obviously there's mixed reviews of whether British Gas actually even deliver that quality anymore. But certainly from a branding perspective, have a recognisable brand which people trust and buy into, and offer installation and service and repair to a very high standard, which is pretty much what we're all about, really, just looking after our customers. And that's how Glow was built. Sort of fortunate enough to be told that they'd accept my redundancy, because I registered my interest to be made redundant. So I was fortunate enough to know that I was leaving 4 or 5 months before I was actually leaving, if that makes sense, which was a good period of time for me to build out a lot of the systems and processes that I wanted to work on. So when I did go by myself, I was doing it in a very different way to before. I took a lot of the best bits that I learned at BEG, and I removed a lot of the crap as well, with a vision in my head of having a business, hopefully, in, well, still not a finished article yet, but having a business which is a robust business that's reliant on people, looks after the people, looks after the customers, and is known for being the best around. And that's what I'm striving to do every single day. And it's never easy, but that's my path and that's the journey that I'm on.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a really good way of going to start a business is to get all that kind of experience while someone's paying you. Did you plan that? Did you always know, actually, I want to start my own business? And this is a route to that?
Definitely not. But I was having this conversation with someone the other day, and it's experience that I would give to anyone about, yeah, gaining that experience at another firm. Because from the age of 18 to 26, 27, I was not focused on my career at all. Because, like I said, I was just wanting to play football at high as I could and maybe play conference. And I was sort of unbeknowingly getting that experience. It wasn't that I didn't take my job serious, still enjoyed what I did and worked hard, but and my focuses were elsewhere. So there was no intention for me to use them businesses for my own gain in the future. But ultimately, like, I could never do what I'm trying to do now without all that experience, like you say. So yeah, it's really invaluable, really, what I've done. Which I think's a lot to say for any apprentice that's getting into any trade. Just taking the first step and getting into a industry, whether it's heating industry or whatever it is, if it's a good industry, you don't know what it's going to lead on to and how it's going to pan out. Because when I was 18, there's no way I necessarily would have thought I'd be doing what I'm doing now. But I wouldn't change it for the world without it's panned out. I do enjoy the industry, enjoy what I do. So, yeah, it's not planned, but it's definitely good advice to anyone if they are very career orientated from an early age. I think just getting an apprenticeships and sort of learning your time and learning off others is obviously good.
And would your recommendation be to get that experience at a business like yours, or do you think it was, because it would have been very different, that experience at BG, presumably? Like, I guess, what's the most...
Again, if you're going to be very tactical about it, I kind of feel like, unbeknown to me, it was perfect the way that I did it. I started out at a social housing company. So, you know, you're obviously going into social housing. So you saw a lot of, you did see a lot of poverty at the end of the day. But the standards that we were upheld to, it was my dad actually, who was a supervisor along with some other supervisors at that business. And they had really high standards of work. And we treat the customer's property just as you'd treat, you know, £1 million property. Like, there was no difference in the way you approach the job. But it's very, very high volume amount of works in regards to the servicing that was required. Obviously, the amount of houses that you was covering, the amount of boilers that you're installing. And I think I probably got most of my install experience from that period of time. And then when I transitioned over to British Gas, like, you're tending to deal with more affluent customers that are prepared to pay for quality. And that was another different side of the industry, which I saw. So I kind of feel like I benefited from... you know, your generic £20 services, because a lot of it was on price work then. I don't know if it still is. Towards British Gas, where, you know, you was on a salary and it was all about, yeah, it was about productive and you was monitored on your performance and such like. But ultimately, it was all based around quality as opposed to productivity. And everyone that you'll speak to, whether they've been at British Gas, they'll have different stories on that. But, you know, I was in a team where I had a really good manager and there were good people around me. And, like, we did actually care about doing the right thing. And there were some really highly skilled people as well there. So I was quite fortunate with not just the business that I went to, but I think the people that I work with at BG. So I've kind of seen two sides of the industry, which has been very, very helpful, I'd say.
Mm. And you mentioned that there was sort of something about the BG model or what they were transitioning to that wasn't quite right for you, or you didn't necessarily agree with. What was that?
It's documented, isn't it, about fire and rehire with BG. But, you know, I was there maybe almost six, 7 years ago. And they were talking about the next terms and conditions shake-up then. So I know that Chris O'Shea gets a lot of hammer for obviously being at the spearhead of it, if you like. But before he was there, you know, they were talking about this being a drastic change just because the business needed to, because it was such a heavy business, really. And obviously it sold a lot of assets. It's in a highly competitive energy market. And a lot of that had knock-on effects to the service and repair and the installation side of business, where, you know, they're competing with the likes of Heatable or Boxed, where, you know, simply businesses haven't got as much overhead. But whilst you've got people and you've got a workforce which is really set in its ways, heavily unionized, and I've got nothing against the union because people need representing, but it's a very outdated model. And I think that's the bits where I always compared the British Gas way of things with the social housing company at Aaron Services. We had a union there, but the union didn't have the same influence. And a union is to protect people, I get that. But British Gas hasn't moved quickly enough, and it shouldn't be really. I don't feel it should have ever really got to the stage that it's in now with the fire and rehire. I feel it had enough strength to move in a direction where people would still continue to pay for quality while streamlining. So I can't really talk about, you know, the external factors like the energy market and all stuff like that. But certainly from a boots on the ground, engineers that I was dealing with and working with and managing, it wasn't a happy place to be, and it wasn't a great environment. And it went from being a great environment to sort of, you could sort of see where it was going. And I was coming in and just not really enjoying what I was doing, because not 9 times out of 10, I was delivering a message from the senior leadership team, which was changing all the time, and not always ringing true with what the overall strategy or vision of the business was that was delivered from the SLT. It wasn't always ringing true. Their actions weren't always ringing true with what they said they wanted. So it just didn't quite align for me in the end.
Do you think the customer experience suffered?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no secret. British Gas are trying to become to a more flexible working model where they're relying on more subcontractors. There was telling engineers that, there was telling management that, and the commercial piece of it is they needed to do that because they need to be more competitive on cost. But the reason why British Gas were British Gas is because people knew what they were getting and it was a high level of service. So if you're going to water that down, yes, you might become more competitive on cost, but you're also going to become a cropper when things don't go to plan. And everyone that works for me, the thing that I've learned from that is, obviously, I've not got the same problems because I've not got the same size. British Gas have got, obviously, a lot of problems. They need to spin a lot of plates, and I'm certainly in no position to tell them how to run their business. But I want everyone employed in my business because that gives me more control. It gives me more control on quality. And you still have to manage quality hard when you manage a local business, let alone if I had subcontractors in. My experience of using subcontractors is a poor one because I don't feel like it drives accountability for people to do the job properly.
So that process of finding people who are a good fit for your business, like what does that look like for you?
It is hard. It is hard. And I've definitely learned a few lessons along the way. I do like my videos and stuff like that, because I feel like it naturally maybe draws people of a similar mindset to your business. So a lot of our branding and a lot of the videos that I do is intentional, really, and hopefully enticing the best talent in the industry. Obviously, you've got to pay people. People want to obviously have a good pay packet, which is a constant work in progress on, you know, how you do that, certainly from an engineer's perspective. But simple usually works quite well on that. So social media is probably where I leverage most of my people from, and indirect recommendations. So, you know, I do referrals. So I think for the last engineer we employed, I offered 500 quid to anyone which would recommend someone, which then led to a job, and then them passing out on a probationary period of 3 months.
Is that anyone or in the team?
Anyone in the business, if they recommended someone that was obviously qualified for the role, they pass the interview and, you know, they stay with us for 3 months and they pass out through the probation, there's no issues, you know, they would get debited that, which I think is a small price to pay, really, on the basis of getting good people through the door. You know, you pay a recruitment firm more money than that. I've experimented with different ways, to be honest. Ultimately, it comes down, I think, to trusting your gut. If you've got a bad gut from the offset, usually it serves you well, and you sort of feel that, I find. I've created an environment here with our office and what I've built in our office space and the way that we work with the processes in-house, which is hard for me to convey over a video, but I'm trying to build a business where an engineer just is an engineer and they can focus on being an engineer, as opposed to whether it's a salesman, whether you're asking them to do too much admin. You know, I feel like organization is something that you can control if you have a lot of employed people in-house and a lot of good processes in-house. And I think that ends up meaning that you get better, happier engineers and also more productive engineers. So it's still a work in progress. I don't think we'll ever fix it. But from a people perspective, definitely social media. Work with a local college as well quite closely, certainly for apprenticeships. They're quite helpful. So good advice to anyone would be to not just speak to the college and speak to the lady at reception, literally form a relationship with the person in the apprenticeship department. They all have apprentice departments at these colleges. So you need to reach out to there who the go-to guy is. And you need to find out who's proactive, in my experience as well, because there might be 3 or 4 people in an apprenticeship department. There's usually one good one.
Oh, that's cool. And what kind of systems do you have in place within your team? Like, do you all use the same bit of software, or like how does it work internally?
Yeah, so we use ServiceMate. We use Lead Hero. So ServiceMate's job management, we've set it up. I know obviously we've got an account with you guys, haven't we? And yeah. I'm looking to maybe move to that in the future. Set me up.
ServiceMate. Yeah,
it's one of them where, because everything that I'm trying to do, I'm trying to scale it. And I'm trying to be the creator of it, but I don't want to be the day-to-day manager of it. So I'm building things and then I'm letting go to my team. And that's why certainly ServiceMate at the moment, we've got a lot of time and effort that's gone into that. So I build my quotes in the customer's house from a boiler quote. And it literally goes through so many different scenarios. It'll build out labor, it'll build out materials for then the team in the office, if the customer has to accept, to just fulfill that order and obviously go ahead with the job. And that's one reason I feel like I'm trying to explain why I've not gone to it yet. But it is one. It's a sustained period of time where if you're going to do something right, you really do need to put the time in to making sure that the process works, because process is all well and good, but they do take time to build and they take headspace to build. And then when they start niggling and there's glitches and things going wrong, you need more time to correct them. So I'm kind of hesitant to mess about with our systems too much. I like to keep it simple, and I like to try and use ServiceMate for all our job management. Like I say, we do quote from there as well directly. We have a holiday system called Timetastic. If there's anyone looking to manage their team's annual leave, sickness records, like that, it's a really good tool, Timetastic, and it's only about 10 to 15 quid a month. The beauty of it is everyone can see the internal team's annual leave. So obviously I'm constantly putting things back onto my team. Can I have time off? Well, have we got the availability for you to have time off? Like, have you got cover for your role, etc.? So that's a really good tool. And then aside from that, something called Lead Hero, if you've heard of it as well, which is more inbound sales, which we didn't necessarily get to grips with initially. I think we're getting a bit more bang for our buck out of that software now. It's quite good for obviously incoming inquiries and managing that until we can get them to a point in time where we just transition them over to Service Mate.
So how does that work?
So Lead Hero, I think they call it like a pre-sales software. So if you had, let's say you had advertisements, you can have pipelines and funnels to take a customer through a set pipeline to build continuity in your customer journey, I suppose. So we use them from, you can build independent forms. You can embed them on your website. If the customer was to fill out that form, it would take you specifically into Lead Hero with all the contact details, and then you can take them through that pipeline where they've automatically popped up, if that makes sense. So it's very much, like I say, creating the process for someone else to manage it again. So if you've got that inquiry, okay, they go into the first stage of they won't want a quote from you. What's the next stage? Next stage would be contact them. The next stage would be book them in. After that, it's follow up the quote. Until hopefully we get to a point where I say, okay, we've got all the information, they've accepted the quote, we'll move them over into Service Mate and we'll manage the job from there. It does a lot though, to be honest. It's got a social media manager on it now, so that's obviously quite helpful. Like I say, the big downfall of BG as well was the amount of systems that they had. You know, installations, I think, worked on Salesforce. You had the service and repair size on Winnis. You know, they must have had four or five different operating systems across different business units.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge for us. Is kind of making sure that system covers as much as it possibly can, whilst, you know, there are things like your accounting software, which is always really needs to be a thing that focuses just on that job. But I guess as a business owner, like your absolute ideal world scenario is that I've got one bit of software, it does everything.
Yeah. I mean, we have, obviously anything that integrates is fine, because if it integrates nicely, doesn't it? So I have used, and we do use Zapier quite a bit. So we've leveraged a bit of tech and other software, but directly off Service Mate Actions. So it's still dealing with the one main piece of software that I like to use. But off the back of that, obviously, we'll trigger events on whatever we're trying to achieve, really.
Cool. Well, there's a few other areas definitely worth diving into. I will just mention this. This isn't a sales podcast, but we've just recently released a customer pipeline update, so you can customize your customer pipeline and feed straight into our kind of job management. But for anyone listening, if they do want to check that out, that's there. But yeah, moving away from not selling Payaka.
No, you've got to do it, haven't you? No one else can do it for you.
I want to dive in a little bit into the perceived value piece and talk about that kind of the selling part. And what's quite interesting now is, you know, I'm sure at British Gas you had all the tools to enable you to do that. And one of the things that we're focused on as well is giving you the tools to sell your product in the most effective way. How do you see things like Boxed? And I've got some like quite strong opinions on this from a business like yours. I don't know if you know my background at all, but I launched the Corgi Home Heat solution, okay, which is similar to Box. So for anyone listening who doesn't know what that is, a customer can come to a website, go through an online survey, get a fixed price, like fast installation. What's your view on businesses like that, and how do you approach it from a competitive point of view?
Before I answer, is that still going then? Did you say you launched it? So is that...
That was nothing to do with Payaka. So that was... before I started Payaka, I was working at OVO Energy. They acquired Corgi Home Plan and wanted to launch Corgi Home Heat. And I was given the opportunity to sort of launch that business from scratch. which was cool experience for wanting to start a business myself.
Yeah, because you've sort of done it from the employed environment.
Exactly. So it's kind of the biggest tip that if you've got the opportunity to do it, like you say, you go somewhere where someone is paying you to learn how to do the thing that you want to go and do. If you get that right, it's great.
Yeah, good experience. So is that still going, that business?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Is it? It's not seems it doesn't seem to have the same exposure, does it, as like
no.
Yeah,
I mean, so I mean, there are a few that are doing similar things now. I mean, obviously, Box like got a lot of funding and investment and poured a lot into marketing. The Corgi brand, I guess, is a similar kind of. It's a bit of a confusing one, really, isn't it? Because they're sort of trading off the old like gas safe register. And people don't really understand how that works. Like, because you can basically buy the license for the Corgi brand to run like Corgi vans or Corgi whatever. Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I feel like it's all well and good having a brand, but that brand's constantly got to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think obviously the likes of Boxed and the Heatable and these businesses, they're innovative, aren't they? So whether they're right or wrong, whether you dislike them or like them, they're doing something different and their brand's being known for doing that. And I feel, I didn't know you could do that with Corgi, but yeah, obviously most people, somebody still gets some customers asking, you know, are you Corgi registered? So yeah, it obviously provides some value, doesn't it? But my opinion on all them sort of firms is fair play to them, really. Similar to what I was saying earlier, my concern is how do you control quality? But you know, it's not all bad. I certainly hear more positive stuff about Box than I do about you know who we keep referring to. Heatable, I see them online, but I don't necessarily feel their presence day to day. Whereas I do feel Box's presence day to day in regards to me quoting and being in competition with them. But I do feel like there's massive value in going and seeing a customer face to face, and I feel like it can stop potential issues. So I don't fully understand their model or whether you're potentially subject to charges. I know they do fit. There's quite a lot of marketing now to say there is a fixed cost when you do their online quoting tool and stuff. So I don't know the ins and outs of how that works. Ultimately, they are doing something which is different and obviously making the industry move in the right direction, whether it's fully in the right direction. I do think there's elements of that model which leave you vulnerable as a business to make money. But, you know, I'm sure they know what they're doing better than me. But I would much rather do what I do, and I'd rather have surveyors go into a customer's house, build a relationship with a customer, survey the job in a detailed way to notice what the best thing is for that customer. Because, you know, 9 times out of 10, when I'm going to quote jobs anyway, the customer has an idea in their head. You don't necessarily tell them they have to do it a certain way, but you offer them different solutions. And, you know, sometimes you can see the light bulb moment flick off and they think, oh, yeah, I could do that. And it might mean that they moved the boiler or, you know, they've gone for a different type of system for what they were first thinking about. So I get it. Box is going after convenience, isn't it? And it's going after busy people, busy professionals maybe who want that convenience piece. But as we move towards a time where there's going to be a lot more focus on renewable technologies, on being more efficient with your gas consumption, is doing that online going to be the best way to do it? I don't necessarily think it is, because I think it's going to, again, mean that you're potentially more at risk of spending more on your annual gas bill. Which I know is a completely different topic, probably go into detail about that, but I don't think that's good for Boxed, because I don't think convenience always means you get the best job. Whether that's, I don't mean by price, I mean whether that's, you know, setting the right controls for the system, maximising its efficiency. You know, I'm talking to more and more customers these days who are getting really, really turned on about weather compensation. And, you know, and about modulation ratios on boiler, which is definitely a change in mentality. And that's only off the back of the gas prices going up. people are more in tune now to, look, how do I make this thing that's on my wall work as efficiently as possible? Whereas 12 months ago, even a little bit less than that, before these prices went up, I don't think people had the same attention span to it.
Yeah, that's it. You touched on a lot there, a lot. So I think, to touch on the model, I guess at a big enough scale, you can take a portfolio view of like all of your work and say, look, we're going to give a fixed price. We know we're going to lose on these, and we know we're going to like maybe gain a bit on these. So I get it, kind of works at scale if you can get it reasonably accurate. I guess my real, frustration with it when I talk to people running businesses like yours, I mean, I totally agree with you, by the way, is people look at it and it is an innovative model and it's great for them. But my frustration is when the smaller businesses like yours who have the edge in terms of that personal service and what you can deliver there, who think, actually, no, I need to have my own version of this on my website, give people like fixed price quotes to compete, rather than saying, I'm going to use the kind of the edge and the value that I have in my business in that personal service, that going and quoting and giving that more sort of consultation type approach. Like that, they need to focus on that rather than competing like for like.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of Charlie Mullins and what he's done. It's something that he talks about quite a lot, that people will always pay for quality. That's not to say Box don't give you quality. I'm sure they do some really good installs, but I just feel like that personal touch is a big thing when you're asking people to part with £2,000 to £4,000. And, you know, I feel like everything's got its place in the market. So Box is probably serving its purpose in a lot of ways for a lot of people. But I don't think they're ever going to fully own the market with that model. But the biggest problem in the industry is labor, how you manage that labor, the gaps of labor, and essentially fulfilling the demand that you might have. And I don't see how that, even if they was to get a bigger share of the market, I think their problems then are still going to be the same problems, which would be labor, which would be quality of work, because they don't necessarily have as bigger infrastructure or in looking after them engineers. Again, I could be wrong, but I just see that if they get bigger, they're going to need more management, aren't they? And it's going to be a more heavier business because they're going to have to employ more people, which is kind of why it wins at the minute. I imagine it's a subcontractor model and people pick up what they can as and when. They might have a few directs, I imagine, but...
Yeah, absolutely. So an area you touched on there was the kind of the weather compensation and people getting really into the technical side of this. Another thing I know you talk a lot about, and I think you've got a bit of experience in doing, is heat pumps. And obviously that's a growing area with the... clearly the shift is moving away from gas over the long term. What's your kind of thoughts on that area at the moment? I mean, is it something that you're seeing a lot of success from yourself personally, and what are the problems?
I think the problems are well documented. It's not fit for every, it's not a solution for every property, but they are a good solution. And they're not as complicated as people lead you to think, if you understand the main principles. That's not to say I'm the most technically minded out there, but I know enough about them and enough about the main principles of how you install one effectively. And it all comes down to design and getting an initial heat loss survey done and an in-depth one, and comparing your running costs, really, because the biggest barrier is obviously your costs. So, you know, your cost to a customer. Yeah, huge topic, mate, to be fair. We're probably doing, you know, 10% towards renewables, but I've always had it in my mind that I want to be doing something, because I do feel like it's going to take off in a big way. And how much we attack that's going to be, down to what happens in the market over the next 12 to 18 months and how much it does take off. But we are getting more inquiries because obviously we've done them and we're known for doing them. it's just a different model because, like I said, everything I'm trying to do is very, very scalable with the software that I use and stuff like that. And obviously, if I'm to start focusing more on heat pumps, there might be a higher margin in it. But my role, my day-to-day role, would have to change because I'd need more time to do more surveys. Quoting would look different. Whereas at the minute, I can pretty much go into a customer's house and have a quote with them inside 60 minutes sent to them via email and text to them. So watch this space, really, I suppose. But do I believe in heat pumps as a good alternative? Yeah, I mean, they're obviously lowering emissions. And I've got one in my house, if that says anything. And I had natural gas available. I took that out. The running cost difference is going to be around £50 over the year for me personally. And I think as we sort of go in over time, I do see the cost of electricity hopefully coming down, and I see fossil fuels continually to be priced negatively. I mean, in the real world, we should obviously be incentivizing running costs or greener electric. Make the grid greener, if you like. So I don't think until we've got, I think the government said by 2030, don't they? They want 95% of electricity to be made from renewable energy. I think until that actually comes to fruition, we're probably going to struggle to talk all the time. But when we are there, if the price of electricity comes down four times, pumps, then sort of a no-brainer from a running cost perspective, isn't it? If it's installed well. So I don't really know how to answer it. I don't know what the industry is going to do. I know there's a lot of talk about hydrogen. I don't think any proposals are really going to solve every scenario unless we start with buildings first and the fabric of buildings and getting every single home up and down the UK suitably insulated before we start looking at how it's heated. I kind of feel like we tend to focus on it the other way around in this country, and I don't see what's going to change anytime soon at the minute, if I'm being a little bit cynical about it.
And I guess one of the problems that you touched on there in terms of adopting it as part of your business transitioning to doing more of it is that quoting time and the complexity of it. I was having a conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago, I think, about you know, how they deal with that. And I guess one of the biggest issues is the standard model is not to charge for your time when you're doing a quote. But I think my feeling is that I don't think consumers necessarily would object to it if you did do that, because like they're used to, say you're building an extension, you pay your architects, you pay your like structural engineer like up front to do the survey work. How do you feel about that? And do you think that's anything that you'd ever introduce into your business?
We already do it, to be honest. We charge £300 for a full heat loss survey, and that gives the customer a full, we use the heat engineer software, we give them a full report, it's about 18-19 pages, something like that, and then a full quote off the back of it, which would change however many times you want to change, you know, because it's daft things like, once you've worked out your heat loss, you've got to figure out, you know, what wall space have you got? Because you're going to be upsizing your radiators, you haven't always got the wall space, so it's literally painstaking at times to what you would naturally do with a gas boiler, where you've just got so much more tolerance and so much room to play with. You can do it more fag packet, but I think that's slowly getting there as well, and naturally will get quicker over time as well. In regards to quoting, I think there's a lot of the firms that do it, and I didn't agree with it at first, but I'm sort of coming around to the idea that it probably is the best way of doing it, of providing a customer an estimate based on the information that you do have, whether it's an EPC online, to then do a full heat loss survey, because you know, you've got a lot of people which are just trying to find out information, and you know, if you're not careful, you can spend a lot of time and waste a lot of time, because we charge £300 for a heat loss survey, like I said, and I'm at the point where even when I'm doing one, I'm sort of resenting doing one, even for £300, because of the time that it takes me. But I'm probably 60 to 90 minutes in the house, and then I'm probably another 60 to 90 minutes, you know, emailing, building materials list, building a full detailed quote. And I'm not doing surveys, obviously, to make money. I'm doing surveys to win work to keep my team busy. So I'm coming more around to the idea of giving customers estimates, and at that point, they're letting them know the next steps of process. And then that might actually be a chargeable heat loss survey once you've got your estimate. And there's a lot of learnings that I've had from heat pumps over the last year or two, but certainly estimates, if there's anyone thinking about getting involved in stuff at the minute, like, it's good to obviously go through and spend the time building quotes and doing heat loss surveys, but it'll get to a point where you need to try and streamline what you do. And that's probably where we're going to go, more estimate based. And before we get more commitment, spend more time with customers.
I think that's really top advice, and I think it's an area that a lot of people are struggling with. So, yeah, that sounds good. The last area I wanted to touch on, because it's something that I guess I'm a big believer in, like businesses like yours, and I know you're doing a lot of this already, but I guess building like recurring revenue relationships with customers, so like getting them coming back for future work, and actually thinking about the lifetime value of the customer rather than like that first individual bit of work. And I'm sure you've got all the systems and processes in place for that. How do you approach that? I mean, I can see on your website you do service plans. I guess that's a big part of that.
Yeah, we've got around 400 now customers on them agreements. And I think I was lucky, like I said, when I left British Gas, I knew I was leaving well before. So, you know, bottom line is I was doing work for Glow before I left, really. I was still trying to be professional as much as I could, but I was getting myself ready to go. So the plans were ready to go from day one. It's a difficult one. I mean, this last few years has probably been the hardest few years of my life with everything that I've done and stuff. And it's come at a consequence of myself. I've had to put myself second a lot of the time. But I did sort of knowingly go into all this with that in mind, trying to make something for myself, really. And yeah, I think the recurring revenue model, which is where you're going, it's one that I don't think you should go into lightly, is my advice. I think if you're going to do it, I think there needs to be a structured plan there. I know there's a lot of chat about people doing this, and I think people offer different service plans to what we do. We are a home maintenance service, so we are pretty much 365 days a year at customers' beck and call. So, you know, we need call-out rotors. You know, we need men available to always deliver a good level of service, because that's the most important thing to me. So there's two sides to it, really. If you're going to build in recurring revenue, you know, what does that actually look like, and does the customer see value in that? And the other side of it is, have you got the capacity to do it? Because, you know, I've had to cancel things. I've had to go to customers in these first 3 years because the infrastructure wasn't built. But I've always had it in my head what I'm building, if that makes sense. So I knew sort of what I was getting into, but we're trying to build in as much value as we can to customers and build in good margins into customers that we've got, so we can always deliver the service. Because it's all right being cheap on recurring revenue from a plan perspective, but, you know, you need to fund it, and it takes people to run it. We've moved from, I think it was Stripe, when we first started, which is our payment provider, to a system called RMS, Retail Merchant Services, to go cardless. And every time we've moved, you know, it's come at extraordinary pain trying to define the best renewal process for a customer, which is going to take the less amount of admin each year at renewal, which is going to be more continuity for the customer, so there's less touch points. We don't necessarily want to be reminding the customer every time their card runs out that they've got an agreement with us. You know, we want a direct debit, which is going out each month, where we can control, obviously, our renewals a bit better. So it's great to have, and it's a great source of income to have on a monthly basis, but I just wouldn't go down to it lightly. I think it really needs some serious thought on what you're trying to achieve at the back of it, because, you know, we get a relatively decent pot of revenue coming in each month from it. But like I say, it costs to serve. It does cost to serve. And we need to really be up to around 1,000 people, I think, to really sort of make it work, which is the path that we're on, really.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly the model that we have as well, and a similar sort of challenge with, we strive for our recurring subscriptions. But yeah, as you say, like when you're dealing with like cards expire, just managing that, and you can put really efficient systems and processes in place, but it needs a lot of thought.
That used to frustrate me when the cards run out all the time, because it's like you're then paying someone to chase up. I know you can automate elements of that, like renew your card details, etc., send them a link. If the customer doesn't do that, you've either lost a customer because they're not renewing it anyway, or you're spending time to try and get them back. So, I mean, put it in perspective, I've got a member of staff in 4 days a week just managing 400 customers. So that's every new renewal process. But we're trying to be a similar model to BG again. So at renewal, we are assessing our risk, which is set up in our T's and C's. So, you know, if they've had 8 call-outs, you know, and 1,500 quid's worth of parts spent on them, then obviously that's going to be factored into their renewal premium. So, again, we started with Stripe, and then we felt like it kind of limited us in our renewal process and our also in regards to the cards running out. So Go Cardless works quite nicely for us, because I find that direct debits are just a bit more straightforward, and it puts you as a business owner in a bit more control. And naturally as well, I think customers prefer direct debits. Certainly the clientele we've got, I feel like
easier to manage, I guess, because you can. The hard part is that the initial friction in setting up, like people have often got like card details saved, or they've got that on them, like getting that bank details is a little bit more friction up front. But yeah, in terms of management on an ongoing basis, it's actually easier, I think, from a consumer. By the way, Stripe does do direct debits.
Does it really? Interesting.
Quick one. So you mentioned that this has been like the hardest year of your life. Would you change anything? Or hardest 3 years? Like, would you change anything? I'm sure there's lots of little things you'd change, but like, would you do it again? You happy?
Yeah, I'd do it all again. I mean, I was 29 and I left British Gas, and it's a bit sad really, but I remember looking at the clock, it was New Year's Eve, thinking like, I'm just going to commit and heavily commit. So I knew what I was going to have to sacrifice, if you know what I mean, but it's just the learnings you pick up along the way. Obviously, I wouldn't want to repeat some of the failures and mistakes that I've made. Any successful person will tell you that mistakes have been made and you've learned from them. So it's just about not making the same ones, and people is generally the hardest bit about business, and getting good people. It's the most satisfying thing when it works, and when you've got good people, it's the most frustrating and sort of soul destroying thing when it doesn't. And you are reliant on people if you want to do something and build something, you know, it's about building the culture. And would I change anything? I don't think I would, because I'm happy where I am and I'm happy where we're going. So it's just obviously at them times where you are absolutely tested, you know, you're a business owner yourself. We've all sat there sometimes and thinking, why do I do this? But then you come round, you know, you stop being so emotional about it, and then you just sort of get back to it, don't you? Dust yourself down a bit.
It's kind of like, personally, like starting a business from scratch, I'd certainly say, like, you talk about highs and lows, but you will have that, like, within one day you'll be like rock bottom to like, oh, actually everything's amazing, everything's gonna take off.
And yeah,
it's just you know, you've got to be prepared for it.
Yeah, it's about who's around you as well, isn't it? I suppose, like, I think when you do get good people and you do get the right people through the door, like, the weight that they can lift is incredible, really. So that, like, when you do invest in the right people, you know, it's a worthwhile investment, because if you can get people in a little bit better than you, I've got a couple of decisions to make at the minute in regards to, and it's certainly an individual who's better than me. He's more organized than me. He's got a different sort of mindset in the way that he operates and he works. And that's one thing that I'm trying to do now more. I'm trying to see the gaps in me, because obviously, like you're an owner of a business, you're probably creating and trying to create things to make things and improve things, but you need them people and structured people around you to either clear up the mess you've left or or just point something out to you about how you can do something in another way.
Yeah, it's certainly something I look for. Is you want anyone you hire, you want them to be better than you at that thing, because like you as a business owner, you're very much a generalist. You're like I'm pretty good at all these things, so I have to be. But if I'm hiring someone, I want them to be better at that thing than me. And I think, you know, sometimes people do make the mistake of not looking for that. They're sort of like, oh, I want to be in control. But I mean, your approach, you talked about it a bit, but of putting things back on your team constantly, getting to the point where you were not needed is in as many different areas as possible is got to be the goal.
Yeah, it's again though, that's hard, isn't it? I mean, that's culture, I suppose. You're inadvertently building your culture, aren't you? Like, if someone's going to ask me for short notice leave, if it's health related, it's not a question. They're getting the holiday anyway. That's for me to sort. But you know, if someone wants a favour, you know, can you make it work yourself? You know, you've got the same set of problems I'll have by asking me that question. So you know, can Des cover you? Can Aaron cover you? Whoever it is. Yeah, I think the only thing on that one is, I don't know, I was going to ask your thoughts on this. I like to still be the creator, though. So you are general, like you say, so you're a generalist, but I like to know how it works to begin with and then let go of it. So our renewal process and our Glow Plus management of that, I literally got no idea anymore how that works. But when it first started, it was like, this is how I want it. And these are the steps we always want to be. And they are hard people to find.
Yeah, I agree. Like when you're prototyping something new, it's tough. In the early stages, I guess, I'm the same. I mean, I'm very product focused, I guess. I like getting in all the detail, like how things work and sort of, you know, I'm going to have, if I'm in there, I'm going to have an opinion on something, you know, as much as I try to get. Others. I guess the dream though is getting to that point where you've got someone who's gone, I've put this new system in place and I've just done it, and independently, like that I think that's where you want to be.
Yeah. I feel like the difficult thing with that though is any system or any process, I feel like as a business owner, you naturally see the pitfalls in it quicker than the person doing it, which I suppose then becomes just more about support. You don't necessarily have to be involved in the process, but yeah. So it's definitely something I've got to probably work on. But I mean, I think it's good to know how processes work anyway, because if you know that, at least you can relate to the person and what they're doing a bit better, and you can have better conversations and stuff. So,
and the thing that you do have is that broader view of everything that's going on, whereas the person doing that thing only has a view of that, and they don't necessarily see how it interacts with everything else in the business. So yeah, it's a hard one. It's certainly not a problem I've solved, but I'm probably into in the detail of too many things at the moment.
How many is there at Payaka then?
Similar to you, so we've got 11, will be 12. Recruiting a few more roles, so that's split between got tech team, tech and design of 4 people. We've got 2 in marketing. 3 in kind of customer operations, so doing like custom service, sales and ops, and 1 more like office manager support.
Quite a nice number really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. I think scaling, hiring more people is the biggest challenge, like you say. Yeah, people's the biggest thing. If you can get that right, then you've got the right culture in place, and you just need to focus on things running without you needing to be in the detail.
Yeah, which, by the way, is a work in progress. There's nowhere near done. Like, I'm still heavily reliant at times, but, you know, from where it was to where it is now is not a bad place, really. So I'll take it.
Cool. I think we're probably running out of time. Final question. Are you still playing football?
Yeah, part-time. Like, it's semi-pro. Probably, like, I've not played for a few months. We just moved house, so... It's like all my spare time has been going into the house, and it's a bit of a shame because I was enjoying it. It's basically at a level where if I turn up, it's great. If not, it's not the end of the world. It's pretty easy going. Again, I would like to be at a point where the business is a lot more independent than it currently is, where I can go play football. I'm 32. So if I have got, you know, I should be able to play for another few years, really. But it's the challenge of when you're playing semi-pro, Tuesday nights, Thursday nights training, Saturdays, you know, all periods of time where our business is still working and needing visits. So,
do you have any regrets about that?
I might regret it in a few years, but not massively. No, it is what it is. I do need to find more time for myself, which again is another challenge as a business owner, and it's, you can't just keep neglecting yourself. So yeah, work in progress, really.
Cool. Well, thanks very much for your time, Jack. If you need any of your heating needs seeing soon, I'm sure the Glow Group in Lincolnshire is certainly first port of call. But yeah, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us. And yeah, all the best.
Thanks, mate.
Do me a quick favor, if you're listening to the show, please hit the follow or subscribe button. It helps all the guests that you're listening to on the show, and it helps us deliver more episodes full of top business tips.